Moving on.
This is Paulina.
What, Paulina?
Sorry to interrupt you. I know you wanted to move on. If I may be recognized.
Go ahead.
For computer maintenance and stuff, are most of the expenses contractors or...
No.
No?
No. Well...
So is it equipment? Oh, I mean, for maintenance, I would assume...
Well, let Annelle or Barry tell you
what
Texas,
that's what I'm asking.
Texas
yeah,
tax,
yeah. You said no, but I'm asking
stuff.
Them. Yeah. Annelle, hi. If you don't mind explaining
I don't remember what else was in there when I looked, you know, a month or two ago. Well,
I'd appreciate hearing directly from Annelle. That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay, so two things. One, that for me, computer maintenance is, those are things when Jonathan has to replace a sound card or a keyboard, or needs software to fix something or run a virus scan, things that require us to maintain and or repair computers. Now, a lot of things you've been doing is butchering older, you know, Frankensteining some of the computers to MacGyver a fix rather than going out and purchasing brand new hardware for computers. And that's kind of what we've been operating from for the last couple of months. And
that makes sense. Anya, my question is this. Is anybody charging us consultant fees for this work? I mean, Jonathan Alexander's on his staff, right? And I know, we're in open session, so, in very general terms, is it just, are these expenses that you're projecting mainly equipment costs, or are they personnel-related costs?
These are equipment costs and not personnel-related. Now, also... we're expecting probably the next 3 or 4 months, we're still in shutdown, that, thankfully the computers aren't getting the wear and tear that they normally would get. Jonathan is on, is considered a union staff member.
Right. Thank you.
He's not a consultant. We do have various services that aren't reflected in that line item that we pay for, like MailChimp, TechSoup, and other digital space-related services.
Right.
It's not in that line item, though.
Yeah,
it's a different line item, correct.
Right.
Well, my issue is that the expenses that should go on this line item, as I've said many times before, are going into... maintenance for the tower. They're being miscategorized. TechSoup and Tech Impact should go here, not under maintenance for the tower.
No, that's maintenance technical. That's what that is. Not maintenance tower, maintenance technical. That's where that those charges go that you're speaking of.
Oh, Barry, we've gone over this multiple times. Then what is computer maintenance?
Just what Annelle just explained to you. You know, trying to repair equipment. We go to a company called Guitar Services that repairs studio equipment. That goes in that category too, right there.
What?
That's what Jonathan
computer?
Does.
What?
That's what Jonathan's been doing. He's been repairing some of the equipment in the studios and also the computers for each individual. He might order a part or whatever, you know, for a computer.
Barry, I've explained this to you multiple times.
I just explained to you what that is.
Okay. Computers are in the building.
That's right.
Maintenance technical is at the tower. The computers are in the building. They run what goes on in the building.
Computer expenses don't go in maintenance technical. It goes into computer maintenance.
But they're not going in there, Barry. They're not going in there. Oh, good grief. Okay, whatever. My opinion is this expense line here is too low, and you know you're not accounting for it properly.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Can I ask you a question? How is it that you want to increase all the expenses, you want to reduce some of the revenue, but yet you want to have a balanced budget? And then also you want to actually reduce the revenue for listener support to 21 days at $15,000 a day. There's no way in the world you're going to have a balanced budget,
Barry,
under those circumstances.
Barry, I don't make up numbers, okay? I'm not making up numbers.
And neither do I.
Okay, fine. That's fine. We've been through this. I'm moving on. On line 108, you said you were going to stop paying for RRC. It's still in there. You should take that out, and you'll save yourself $16,000. Okay? Just saved you $16,000. We still haven't figured out what these credit card discount fees are relative to the Cajun Cost subscription services, which Cajun Cost is misnamed. They both seem to be credit card discount and credit card charges. We have not, you know, even though we had a meeting with NAVA, this was not determined, and I still don't know why we have both of these charges. We already spent a meeting on it. They're still there. That hasn't been resolved. I'm just saying it doesn't make sense to me. I can't approve this.
Credit card charges, if I can explain to you, credit card charges come in from Braintree, Paya, from those particular entities for the credit card charges, 6576. Okay? That's what that comes in.
Okay, so what's the other line
Why
item?
Why is that so difficult for you to understand?
What is the other line item on 125? Which is another form of credit card payment.
Those are subscription services.
But they're
Cajun Cost and subscription services. So that
we don't have Cajun Cost, Barry. We don't have them.
Okay, subscription services. Okay, that would be Payment Solutions and Paya comes into that number.
Okay. Well, you just repeated yourself, so we're not, you know, you said Paya was in, you know, credit card fees above. So we still haven't resolved this. Okay, Barry, we still haven't resolved this. It doesn't make sense to me what these charges are. I'm moving on. Line 127, you're dumping all of the postage in this line item, and it should be broken out. We need postage charges for the premium shipping. You know, I've said this repeatedly for months. It's still the same. You know, it's not
postage
right.
Postage is all the charges that's going through the Pitney Bowes machine.
I understand. We've gone through this multiple times, and I've said they need to be broken out so we know what's getting paid for premiums, what's getting paid for these mailings that we're doing now, Barry, don't interrupt me. Barry, don't interrupt me.
You can talk to Terry about that.
Don't interrupt me, please.
You interrupt
me? No, I don't.
Yes,
and I'm not interrupting you now. We need to have a breakout of these mailing charges, especially since you're planning on doing a whole bunch of mailing so we can figure out if we're making money or not on them. I've said this before. I'm not going to say it again. That's, again, the same comment on that line item. Premiums from other vendors is obviously
too low. Okay, can I respond
to that now?
Can I respond
Fine.
To that?
Yes.
Okay, we don't have a way to break out the premium charges per packaging. And if you need to know that, you'd have to talk to Terry about that. Right now, hopefully Allegiance will be able to do that, but right now we don't have that capability to break out how much it charges for all the premiums for packaging. And then for actual mailing, you know, for letter mail.
Well, that's odd because, you know, up until you got here, Barry, we used to do that fine. So I don't know what the difference is.
See, there you go again with your derogatory remarks. I told you about that before.
Okay, well, what can I say? We used to be able to know what our premium shipping was. We used to have, you know, accurate numbers on what our mailing is. We haven't had it. You say we can't do it. Okay, what can I say? Premiums from other vendors at $100,000, that's too low. You've already spent more than 10% of that in the first fund drive. So that number is too low.
What line are you talking about?
136.
136? Yeah, $101,000. Yeah, we reduced it. We're not paying out as many premiums as we used to.
You've already spent more than 10% of that budget in this first fund drive. You've spent at least 20% of that, maybe more.
So you're telling me we spent over $10,000 in premiums for the first fund drive?
You spent $12,000 just on that third-party fundraising. That's already out the door. $13,000 is 50% of what those third-party fundraisers
did. That's not going to be consistent every fund drive. So
I don't care. That's $13,000. That's, you know, a big chunk, and that's only, you know, $25,000. You had $400,000, you know, for this fund drive.
Let me ask you a question. With all the changes you're trying to make, what do you think that is a reasonable amount of net income at the end of the year for this particular budget? Depending, and with all the things that are happening with COVID and the quarantine, what's your, in your mind, what is the optimal number? Do you want a balanced budget, or do you want like $50,000 loss, or do you want $100,000 loss? What's the optimal for you in consideration for all that you're doing in increasing these expenditures and trying to get a balanced budget?
Barry,
do you have an idea?
Barry, I'm not making up numbers. The reason you've run a deficit, the optimal number is. I don't know what the optimal number is. I just know that these are not right. And I know that you've been running a deficit for multiple years, so your estimations have not been good. Okay? You run a deficit because you underestimate your expenses and you overestimate your revenue, and you wind up going through, you know, running into giant deficits. That's the way it works. I'm not making these numbers up because I'm mean. I'm saying you've already.
No, it's your personality. It's your personality.
Okay,
Kim.
Fine. We're not talking. Okay, Barry, stop. You don't like my personality? That's too bad. You know, that's not at issue here. The numbers are at issue. Yeah, I'm not everybody's pail of blueberries, but I'm very frustrated. This is the seventh draft. I've gone over this, you know, for seven drafts, and we're at the same place. I'm just saying, and I don't even, you know, I mean, it's for the rest of the group to decide what these numbers should be. This is my opinions of these numbers. You know, it's going to the LSB, then it's going up to the national, you know, I'm just saying that these numbers are bad. You know, we can do nothing. We can wave a magic wand. We can talk about what a mean person I am, and it's not going to help you balance your budget or pay your debt, pay your bills. Can we move on? I'm done. I've just gone through with my comments on the budget. Let me open up the floor again. For anybody who has comments on this and where we need to go from here. We still don't have a listener support number. Go ahead, Paulina.
Ken to the Ken on the stack.
Okay, Paulina, then Ken.
I'll have to leave in 7 minutes as I have to teach a class at 4:30. I'll be brief. I apologize. I missed the beginning of this meeting, so I didn't hear the discussion on revenue. I understand that there are, you know, I heard all the back and forth about the line item expenses. I am curious about what I missed in terms of revenue estimates. I believe that our concern as the committee, I think pretty much everybody in the committee agreed that the estimated revenue did not seem to be very realistic as far as, you know, what has been raised so far. So I'm wondering how, Aniel and Barry, how you're handling that to make this budget more acceptable, because of course you can balance a budget by say by projecting your revenue to be perhaps higher than it is right now, because hopefully COVID will be over, hopefully our listenership will go up, hopefully people will be donating more, so on and so forth. Or maybe you're hoping that grandma will leave, you know. I hate repeating this, but we don't want to be expecting grandma to pass away, right? So just curious, in very, very general terms, what your expectations are, what you're betting on for the revenue projections.
Okay. Paulina, what we discussed was, I don't think that was the same questions that were asked in the opening of this meeting. Here are some of the things that we are thinking. Looking at the data, and here's something that we're actively working through, is to determine exactly how many sustainers, how many active donors we have. Because one of my concerns, as I looked at the last three fund drives, is that new donations, that means somebody donating for the first time, is not nearly close to where we want it to be. We're seeing great response in added gifts, which means somebody donated in the given year, they donating again at least one more time on top of their first donation for the fiscal year. And we're actually seeing a good portion of people renew too as well. Now, what we're trying to do, and this is something that's currently ongoing and hopefully will get resolved before the end of next week, we're having some complications in seeing exactly how many active donors we have. So why this is important is because when we look at the upcoming fund drive and what kind of messaging we want to do, let's say we look at our active donor base, if 60% of our active donors have done added gifts, whether once, two, three, or four times, our focus on this next drive would probably be better served by having messaging that directly appeals to new donors, or in between fund drives, we directly appeal to new donors. Now, I'm trying to get a sense of what the donor attrition rate has been over the last 5 years to help us gauge what we're dealing with now. So these are answers I don't have exactly, but we're hunting down to be able to tell. But I will say this. I think, and this is something we should look at the whole network and benchmarking ourselves, is on a year-to-year basis, we really need to understand and know how many new donors, new members we're bringing into our organization. That's going to be extremely important benchmark for us moving forward. It's great that donors are giving added gifts, but at a certain point, we hit a threshold where they're not going to give anymore. You know, so if we have an active donor base that's and 80% of them have already given added gifts, it's not going to make sense for us to really focus on encouraging people to do added gifts. Maybe our messaging and our focus should be attracting new donors. And those are two different kind of messaging appeals to donors. There is different effectiveness for those different types of appeals. So this is something that's coming into consideration. And Paulina, I guess you're, I think you're the only programmer on here. So in the next few days or whatnot, we're already going to be reaching out to programmers in preparation of this next drive.
Right.
And I'll be touching on some of this, because I think what we've got to do for the end of the year is really have a part, not all of our messaging, a part of encouraging new donors to join, encouraging listeners that haven't donated before to donate, and we have to have a specific appeal to that. Telling someone that hasn't donated before, all the values you've gotten over the years of KPFK may not resonate with somebody that just started listening 3 months ago. And they may not also understand that public radio is best served by its listeners. And we've got to, this is something that we've got to convey to listeners, that public radio really relies, because when you ask just somebody that has no idea, they just started tuning into KPFK and they like it, they don't understand how the funding model works. They, in some cases, in some of the listeners I've engaged with, they think we're funded by CPB and grant. They don't understand that we're overwhelmingly supported by listeners. So this is going to become more a part of our narrative during fund drives and, of course, in between fund drives. So I don't know, that doesn't clearly answer your question, but this is one big part of answering that question and a shift in the way that we're doing fund drives.
So at some
point in the near future, we're going to want to do at least once a year, this has no bearing on the budget, so I'm just saying, speaking in terms of strategy, of doing just a new donor campaign specifically for new donors, without a premium or maybe even just like a perk. Like we did with this last fund drive, any donation of any level, you get access to the KPFK speaker series, Tom Hartman, The War on Voting. So that did motivate some people and some new donors to donate. So these are some of the things that we've got to look at and how we're going to attract new donors into our fold.
Thank you. I got to run. I have to teach a class right now. I just wanted to quickly follow up. This conversation needs to continue, obviously. I still have a bunch of questions. One major one would be how the projected revenues, what they're based on, still not clear on that, which is what the budget conversation is. Which months are you basing it on, and so on and so forth. But anyway, I got to run. Thank you. I appreciate everybody.
Bye,
talk to you later. Bye. Bye. Thank you.
That's Ken to the stack. Am I on the stack? Hello?
I think so.
Okay.
Sorry. I was on mute. Yes, Ken, you're next.
Okay,
sorry.
Great. All right. So let me go. I was a little bit confused about the discussion we had earlier about major donors and different classes of major donors and stuff. I'm concerned that when you total the columns, you're counting income in several rows. You know, listener, sponsor, but maybe we also put that amount in the website. Maybe we also repeated it in car donations or major donors. So this is very troubling because it's going to make us look like our revenue is higher than it really is. So, I mean, I've lost any confidence that you have discrete lines which say this line, $350,000, is only from a distinct category of income and isn't counted anywhere else. Because you can break things out in a subparagraph somewhere where for analysis. But you certainly don't want to make the mistake of double counting revenue. And I really don't have any confidence now because of what was said that, this breaks out the major donors, but it might have been part of the fund drive and therefore it's listener support. And maybe the guy sent us $1,000 with his credit card over the internet, so it's also PayPal. I mean, I don't know how many times each dollar is being counted. It's troubling. So I'd like to get that clarified. Also, we had asked, I know we had sent a dispatch to Barry and Danielle. I don't know that we ever got a resolution about it. What are we paying? What is caging and how much are we paying for it? Now, that's caging. That's not clearing credit card debt. you know, credit card services. So I don't know that we've ever resolved that. And if there's a line item on the budget does not include caging, remove that word caging from there. And my last question is this. Where on this budget do you have the cost of allegiance? What line?
It's on there, Ken. It's on there. It's on line
134.
Line.
Development.
What did she say, Barry?
134.
Right. Right.
Okay,
that's,
so that's all
fair.
The costs of allegiance.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
17, that doesn't sound like, I don't think that's what I got when I evaluated it in the email.
Yeah, I think
I came up with $32,000 a year because the cost of the software, it's in an email, I distributed it. It was Danielle was the source of the data. I distributed it to everybody in the finance committee. And it adds up to $32,000 a year because of the cost for the software plus the licenses. Each, we have four users. They each pay about $250 a month. So it's $1,000.
That's included into, sorry, I didn't indicate that. The base
you mean
monthly
part of
cost
the licensing, part of licensing
yes,
fee
that's in
the user's licenses?
Yes.
Okay, great. So I misunderstood that. Pardon me. Okay, so then it's $21,000. I don't know if that's right, but okay, yeah, I guess so. That's right. If I take $1,000 a month off of $32,000, I probably get the $21,000. Okay. Great. So it is there. So going back, how can we have certainty that we're not double counting the income? And are we getting anything caged? Is somebody opening up envelopes to make sure that the checks get deposited correctly? Or is it just all credit card clearance? The credit card clearance service is not caging. So if caging is, we're not paying for caging, then remove it. But I was told that we had been paying $80,000 one year, $40,000 the next year, $20,000. What's the story behind that item that was listed in previous years if we're not doing caging? So I don't know. That's my question. I'm sure it's a confusion for everybody, you know, but I'd like to get a resolution on that. And a certainty that we're not double counting income by putting it in multiple categories, that should just be breakouts and not added up in the total at the end of the column. That's all.
You want to take this one, Barry, about the, because we're not
As far as caging costs, Ken, that was a company we used to utilize out of Orange County before we had the lockbox at the bank. So that was a definition of caging costs. They would collect donations and then forward it to the bank. And we had to pay that for that service. So after we got Bank of America to give us a lockbox, we no longer needed that anymore. Also, all the checks that come into KPFK, they are identified as whether they be major donor income or grant money. All those checks that come in are identified at KPFK. And then any checks that come in that have to be sent to the lockbox are also identified that get sent to the bank. So there goes, we don't have a way in which we are double counting income. We get what the money is as far as the bank statement, as far as the deposits that come in, and we book that revenue to listener support or car donations or grant revenue, whatever that may be. So, and getting to your questions about website income, the only website income that I have done is from the PayPal. So when all the activity, when Terry gives me the activity for PayPal, all that income that comes in is via the web, that is web income. So that is totally separate. That doesn't even hit the Bank of America account. That's totally separate. So that's why it's not being double counted.
Okay, so what, I just wanted to check. So when you don't, if you get a major donor, you're not listing it both on the line for listener support and the line for major donor.
This is major donor income.
Right, doesn't get listed in listener support or anything else. Okay.
No, it doesn't.
All right. Thank you. You answered both questions. Thank you.
Well, it's not my understanding of how things work, kind of. PayPal does go into the bank account. So
no,
I don't know what you
mean. It has nothing to do with the bank account. It's totally separate. It has nothing to do with Bank of America.
No, but how do you...
We transfer money into the Bank of America from PayPal.
There you go. That's
not,
what I mean.
Does,
that's what
yeah.
I mean.
Right.
So it does go into the bank account. Right.
Correct.
But
that's that, like I told you before, when it goes into the bank account, it's strictly as a transfer. It doesn't hit any revenue account. It's just from one account to the next.
Right. Well, that's sort of the problem.
The problem is that you're thinking that it's hitting double counting, and it's not double counting. It's just going from one account to another, and that's it.
Well,
I was just asking about that. It's not double counted.
But my understanding is that all revenue should be accounted for in the general ledger.
All revenue is being accounted for. All revenue is being accounted for.
How does the PayPal get accounted for in the general ledger?
What the statement that Terry, I don't know if Terry's ever given you it, but he has a breakout of the daily deposits that come into PayPal that are web income. So that money is basically put into a separate account, which is PayPal, in 37. And then if we have an extra amount of money there, we transfer that money into Bank of America, but it does not hit a revenue account.
Well, how is it credited as revenue?
Right. Like, for example, I'll give you an example. Like, for the month of September, we might have $8,000 that came into PayPal. That money is revenue. It gets booked into revenue. But as far as the transfer between both accounts, that's just pure asset account. It's not hitting the revenue account.
Does anybody else understand that? Because I'll move on.
Yes, it's booked as revenue,
no.
Probably as web income when it comes into PayPal. It's not booked again when it goes into the bank account.
Right, and it's listed as web income on the budget. That's the estimate where he's saying this is what we're going to get from PayPal. That's essentially what he's saying is web income.
Bella, to the stack, please.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So the question is, you asked, Barry, how is this being posted in the general ledger? So I know for a fact, because I worked with MEMS's reports, they're very detailed. However, by the time those reports get over to Barry to post on the general ledger of Great Plains, he may or may not lump them. So the question would be, are they being entered? The last report that I saw from the general ledger, the numbers are being lumped, and they should be entered individually so that we can, and this came up recently in the audit committee as well, so that we can keep track of where the source. We need to track source. And this is why we want the web income to be sourced out, in other words, broken down. The same applies here, because the PayPal comes from different sources. And the other issue is keeping track of our accounts receivable, which seems to be a novelty here. Because we don't know what future payments are going to be because we have not set them up as accounts receivable. We are classifying everything as cash coming in the door as if it was a fresh income, which is not. A large portion, or a considerable, I should say, portion of that needs to be considered accounts receivables, meaning monies that are to be coming in installments or drip down at different times. Thank you.
I want to say one other thing about this caging line item. Yes, we don't use caging anymore since we got the lockbox, but there are also credit card transactions in there. Both of those line items have credit card transactions. You know, we spent the meeting with Meta going over that, and it hasn't been resolved because we still have those two line items, and I don't know what the difference with all these credit card expenses are and why they're on two line items. So where do we go from here? We still don't have a real number for revenue. Any thoughts, anybody?
This is Bella. We really still need to go over the summary from Barry, and I have notes I would like to. We're not going to get anywhere with this situation, the budget. We should reject it and then move on to other issues.
Anybody else have any thoughts? We need to make recommendations to the LSB and from Bella, and from there it goes to the NFC, and you know who's the NFC? It's Fred, and then the PNB is Grace. So where do you want to go with this, Grace or Fred?
Steve to the stack.
Yeah, John into the queue, please.
Go ahead, Steve.
Fred here.
Then Fred.
Okay, well, I'm thinking, can we list out the specific things that we disagree with on this budget and send the bulk of it over to the LSB because I think they need to ponder it this weekend, or I think it's coming up soon at least. So can we list out the 10 or 12 particular points that we don't think the budget's really revealing sufficiently at this point?
Yes, that's a good idea. I mean, that's part of what we need to do. But, you know, when I'm beyond that, Steve, who's going to make this decision? I mean, the people, we have to make a decision. The NFC can't do it. The PNB can't do it. You know.
What decision are you talking about, Kim? Whether to adopt this budget or not?
Pardon me?
Whether to adopt this budget or not?
Oh, we're definitely not going to adopt it. No, we're not going to adopt it, but I think we need to send recommendations to the LSB that goes, you know, beyond us up to the NFC because they can't make the budget. I mean, here's Fred, our treasurer. You know, like, well, what do you have to say, Fred? He's next on the stack. And what does Grace have to say? You know, she's, I don't know if she's still on the call, but...
And specifically, what's the decision we need to make now, whether to pass this budget or not?
We're not. I don't believe we have the votes to pass it. Let's hear from Fred.
What's the decision that you're referring to? I didn't know.
Steve, can I talk?
Yeah, please.
Steve, can I talk?
I'm done.
Yes, go ahead, Fred.
This budget is a total mess. I mean, there's no transparency in the revenue section. Michael Novick has pointed out amply, you know, that it's just sloppy, you know, assumptions. I mean, the numbers don't make sense. And
right. So what do we do with it? And what recommendations do we make?
Well, I mean, the LSB can reject it, but at some point, the NFC has to generate a budget. For the organization.
Brett, you're the NFC.
And
you're our representative. If you can make it on the NFC, then make it now so we can, you know, be done with it. Where do you want to go with this? Because you're the one on the NFC who's going to have to do that heavy lifting.
Well, where do you,
if we
where
don't
do, you
do
start?
It here.
Kim,
start
where
with
do
the
you
revenue.
Start? It's a total mess. There's no planning here. There's no schedule of fund drives, and the length of the fund drives. We're told they're going to have 128 days of fund drive. But when? Where?
It's right on there, Fred, on the doggone fund drive chart I sent you. It spells it out there, right there in front of you. It tells you the number of days for each fund drive in 21 for six fund drive days in 21.
Barry, you already ran 29 days, your first fund drive. So those numbers don't make sense anymore.
Okay, so then how many days do you want to see in the year then?
You tell us.
If I tell you it's going to be 140 days, you're going to reject it. You're going to say, no, Barry, that's not realistic. That's all you do.
Barry,
everything that we present to you, you reject. You reject everything we present to you.
Barry, we don't have the power to run the station. You're the ones with the power. You're the ones who are supposed to be doing the planning.
But when I submit a budget, and then the budget, it comes out where there's a loss, you say, well, we can't accept that budget. It's $300,000 loss. And we're in a world pandemic. And you say, no, Barry, that's not realistic. So, I mean, then you want to see 30% reduction in salary. So then I show you that, and I give you those numbers, and you still reject it. Then you're talking about you want to do a motion to only show $1.8 million for 21. And then in this particular budget, the total is $1.9 million. So I don't know. I really don't understand what you're trying to get to, because I give everything to you. I give you a 30% reduction in salary, and you still reject it.
We're not rejecting the reduction in salaries. You reject the budget.
So when you wanted to see a 30% reduction, I showed you a 30% reduction in salaries, and you still not happy. You still don't. Well, Barry, that's not good enough. So I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know the answer because you guys have all these restrictions and these motions that you pass. And then I try to implement those restrictions and those motions into the revenue, and you still want to reject it. I mean, the current revenue for the budget for 21 is $1.9 million, and you want to do a motion for $1.8 million. So, you're pretty close to what you want.
I feel your pain, Barry. You take a lot of abuse, and I'm glad you hang in there in spite of it.
Thank you.
What are your solutions? Because they're running a deficit for 3 years. So what are your solutions, Steve?
Well, Kim, in all honesty, the problem from the beginning is marketing. And the 800-pound gorilla in the room is bringing in money because we're not broadcasting that people want to support anymore. So that's the problem with marketing.
Okay, but that doesn't help make a budget. What numbers do you want to put in the budget?
I understand where you're coming from, and I support you too. And I know you're suffering, and you're doing your best with this also. It's very tough to resolve this. We need more money, and we need to actually, in a draconian way, cut the expenses still. And that means getting rid of people, at least temporarily. At least they have some unemployment out there they can draw.
Ken to the stack.
Was there anybody
Ken
else besides Ken?
Ken to the stack.
Yes. No, Ken.
Okay.
Kim, I was in the queue.
Yes, that's what I
thought. John is in the queue. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. It's clear this committee is going to vote to or recommend to the LSV to not accept the budget, and then the LSV will do whatever it's going to do, and I'll probably pass that recommendation on to the National Finance Committee and to the PNB. But the real the real question is, what should Barry ask, what should he be doing? Well, we have asked him in the past, and Barry, if you'll recall, I've asked you this specifically. How much cutting do you have to do to get the darn thing to balance? That might require a 90% cut in staff. And you said you could do that, and you would do that. That was a month or two ago.
Yeah,
and
this,
you haven't done it.
You haven't done it.
Okay, right.
Barry, let Wenger finish, please.
Right. So, really, Annual response reports to the IE or the executive director, and of course everybody reports in some sense to the PNB, and the LSB is sort of the local representatives of the PNB, and we're sort of the people who have tolerance for numbers, you know, with regard to the LSB and friends. Anyo has a problem of pulling this thing out. And he's working hard with regard to allegiance. To be fair, we're in the transition. We're basically, it's like, you know, they always, there's an old folk saying, don't change horses in midstream, and we're changing horses from the old system, the one that expired, I guess, last month, to allegiance. And so it's a difficult time, and we've been bound in the past by historical ways we've constructed budgets based upon the reporting requirements that are implied for central services for the national office and stuff. So everything is changing constantly, but ultimately we need planning things. Aniel has reported good progress. He's got a meeting scheduled for Friday that he just CC'd you on, Barry, with regard to this meeting with Nita trying to get this forecasting window. Aniel needs forecasting so he can make good decisions. We, the LSB, want to see good numbers so that we can approve or at least see good decisions, because without getting good numbers, we can't tell if they're good decisions or bad decisions. Nobody can see anything because we're all running blind. But, Barry, what we do need is because a budget is basically a plan, and the plan for Pacifica has to be to not go broke and to repay the loan, so that we don't get foreclosed and just totally shut down, and they sell up our building and that sort of stuff. So everybody needs numbers, from Aniel all the way down to the people on this finance committee. We all need reliable numbers, and a plan is to not go broke, and that means, Barry, you start with a budget that is balanced with regard to whatever revenue you think you have, but it's got to come true, because if it turns out that you're wrong and you say, well, I didn't cut us down too much because that would require a 90% layoff of staff, well, then you didn't do your job, because you have to get it to balance. And because Aniel needs to know what those hard numbers are. We all need to know. So, okay, I'm done with my thought. I hope that helps. Probably doesn't.
No, thank you. It's a little clarity. Ken, you're next.
Yeah, I concur with what John was saying. As I understand it, we are not currently obligated to any contract with the union. And I'm not saying we are union organized, but unions have to be sensitive to all of this stuff that Barry brings up. We're in a worldwide epidemic and whatever. So I don't understand. I know a lot of radio stations, at least on our affiliates, every programmer does his own board op, you know. So I would say, why can't you get rid of the production assistants, the people who make the phone calls and arrange for the guests, and have the programmer do that? They're on the air. They produce a one-hour program. There's 24 hours in a day. They should be able to get done their own assistants, their own production. And they say they're the producers, but we should stop paying for those producers. And also, we might cut their salary or put them on half salary for a period of time, but at least get rid of their producers and maybe get rid of their board ops. And they're all doing this from home now. Very few people come in to broadcast out of the studio. And if they can't, and that they really need that assistance, then get a volunteer to do it for them. We can't afford to be operating as a Class A or even Class B studio, when we're at Class D right now. And so, you know, and the persons who advocated for these things are, without, I don't want to go back into the legacy of this, but at some point we went for strip programming with, I forget the guy's name.
Mark Cooper.
No, not Cooper. Yeah, all right, maybe Cooper, but also the guy from the jazz station. And we went to, you know, paid programmers. And, you know, KPFA has paid programmers, and we have three or four paid programmers. And a majority of them, we, you know, let them volunteer for a while. You know, what am I going to tell you? We made their careers. They can dedicate something to us, too. But definitely get rid of the assistant programmers that are setting up the guests or Twittering or sending out Facebook stuff like that. And cut, so we don't have, we're not losing $130,000 a month. Not a good idea at this time. And, you know, we have to have an alternative step back plan, withdraw the troops, retreat for a while, reorganize, then move forward. So I'm
back
saying I think have a lot of space to cut within the personnel cost.
Right. Could I speak again?
I just want to interject something here. This particular budget includes a 30% reduction in salary, which equates to 17 people
Barry, hold on. Barry, it's not 30% reduction in salaries. Again, I did send in this email. We're currently in negotiations and reduction of courses.
No, I understand that, but I'm saying that...
Hold on, let me finish, Barry, because when you say 30% reduction in salaries, that's something very specific, and that's not something that we are going to disclose. And what we're working out in terms of reduction, no matter how we get there, whether it's through salary cuts, layoffs, furloughs, work share, et cetera, all of the tools, we've got to exhaust all means. I do not, Barry, I'm going to ask you to recant on talking into personnel stuff. We are actively in negotiations right now, and any conversation about personnel and what may or may not transpire in the next week or coming months, we cannot discuss. I do not want to jeopardize a very delicate negotiations right now and get into personnel matters. So if we can move on for personnel matters, I hear you loud and clear, Ken. This is something we've been instructed by. I do report to Lydia or engage with Lydia, and we have been on those PMB meetings, and I'm going to leave it at that and not share any other details or discuss anything that relates to personnel cuts or reductions.
I agree with you. Thank you.
Let's,